food.
Huh?
You see the coverage?
Oh, also, that's about 96 dollars.
Price of drinking water. Okay, objection noted. Clay?
Mr. Chairman, what the two new concepts the House is using in the bill this year, which you may want to include. One is after each line in the budget, we now have the capability in the House to print out the numbers, positions, full-time and permanent part-time. Now, this can be either for informational purposes, as it is in the House now, or it could become, with the addition of language, it could become a maximum number of positions. Let's say you want to do that, that would be a matter of law, number of positions approved. The second thing they do is that in some areas of the budget, it's a little bit packed up now because we haven't got the program like we will by the conference. In some areas of the budget, they have appropriated for personal services and other expenses. And the reason for that being so that you cannot transfer money out of personal services in any other revenue. Their thought particularly there was that there were certain areas of the budget that they were concerned that money was being requested for personal services. Once it was obtained in the budget, the personal service positions were abolished, the money was moved to contractual, and the services formally provided by certain state employees. Heretofore, after that, provided the contract.
Okay, how did they do that?
They did that by simply taking any one of the appropriations they have. I'll give you one. One as an example would be the Pioneer's Home. For each Pioneer's Home, instead of just being one line that says Palmer or Fairbanks or Sitka, there's now a series of two lines. The Pioneer's Home, the individual home is identified, and then personal services for that home is an appropriation. And then all the other expenses for that home is also an appropriation, which means that you cannot move the money from personal services to any other line item to use it for any other purpose other than personal services at that 5 years home.
Well, that's going to create some problems, I think.
You know, an easier way to do it, I've done it anyway, is to look at the printout of all of the positions. If I see any that's over 4 months old, I keep track of October, December, and February. Just knock them out.
Right, but in this particular case, what they were concerned about is, let's say that in that home, I budget for 50 positions there. But after I get the budget approved, I decide, well, I'm going to slice out 10 of these positions, I'm going to use 40. I'm going to switch the money from those positions down to contractual.
Right.
I'm going to contract this. Well, they wouldn't be able to do that under a system.
What's wrong with doing that?
Well, that's nothing right or wrong about it. It's just that they didn't want it to be done that way. Their position was in the House that if services were going to be contracted for, they wanted it so presented in the budget so that they could review it before they decided upon it. They didn't want it being done kind of a lost leader basis where you come in and say, I want 50 positions, and the legislature goes home, and you take 10 of those positions or 15 and slice them out and do a contract. They just wanted to present it in the budget. And in these particular cases they singled out, they simply made it not possible to transfer out of personal service.
What, Chess, you mentioned the Hall Road earlier when we first started, that's not funded.
The Hall Road came in on the day they closed the budget.
Bill, it's going to be considered?
I don't know. It was in this committee, and then Rader took it out of this committee and gave it to Butrovich, a special committee. Yeah, and then they've been meeting all this time on it, and so I guess they just introduced one.
The Hall Road Committee?
Yeah.
It must have gone to some other committee first, yeah. Are you totally closed now? Okay. We have only 5 minutes, Pete.
What's that?
We have only 5 minutes.
All right, well, I'll get broken in here and we'll go.
Or why don't we just do it at the beginning tomorrow?
That's fine.
Okay, 1:30. No, tomorrow's Wednesday. 1:30 Thursday, we'll do a development and a public protection.
Yeah,
we should get those out real quick.
There's no controversy of public protection and none of the development.
And then if we have time, we'll start with the location.
Does somebody want to pull for it? How's Justin?
I'm right, a couple weeks. Every time I try to meet him, somebody, mostly Butcher, been sick and gone, that's.
How about, two people?
I've got about a third time.
Oh, jeez, we're gonna get on it, we're gonna have to take it Monday.
Monday?
Yeah.
Because we're gonna be done with health, solid services, transportation, public protection, development. And that just leaves you and Butcher.
Yeah, he's that. He's gonna put them back, he's busy all weekend on his resources.
Just let him go with resources and do it with another person. Close down.
First, we'll be up Tuesday.
And then we have University of Alaska, which is gonna take all of this. Education.
Okay, we'll meet Thursday at 1:30.
Morning, before we avoid with UAF, there's another part of the community college teachers contract that was brought up by Dave. But
yeah, one of the things we forgot to bring up yesterday because it wasn't included in the university's budget was the daycare provision of the community college contract, and there's supposed to be a funding request under that provision. We've got to work on that.
Explain what it is to
you. Yes, as part of that settlement a year ago, last March, the provision on daycare was went to a study committee. Former interim president Ferguson signed a letter of agreement with the ACCFT sometime in May, I believe, to present a request for funding based upon the results of that study. That study was delivered to me at Fort Regis on February 24th. Pretty much following that meeting. It was passed on to the president. It was reviewed at the special meeting of the Board of Regents on March 6th, or whatever day that was. Following that, Mason West, president of the ACCFT, called and asked that we delay presentation of that study because of the difficulty with the figures that they come up with. We have done that. It's my understanding from Mr. West that he has a revised copy of that study. I have not yet officially received that from the ACCFT. My understanding is that he has a copy of it with him, and that he has sent a copy to my office, but it is not yet received.
If he presents that request to the committee, would that be with university approval on the dollar request?
I have not had a chance to review it.
Do you think it's higher than the one that was already approved?
I don't know.
What is it?
For tying in daycare facilities with child development programs. I'd like Mr. West to speak to the program for the daycare proposal. Thank you, Ken.
Mark, I'm a little lost. What precisely?
Thanks, I have no problem with the question that you and I talked about last night about the budget for the daycare provisions of your contract.
Yes. What happened, sir, there was an agreement part of the contract which addressed a provision for daycare, and we were asked to move it into the next fiscal year, which would be July 1 of 78, in which the program would be changed from daycare to early childhood development. And a study was conducted for some 6 months, and a report generated. And we forward that report to all legislators and Mr. discussed, and that was perhaps reviewed. But the amount that we had was $441,000 for three campuses, which is Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. And the remaining campuses do not wish to have an early childhood development program. And I have a copy of that report.
One more time, what is early childhood development?
It's a process by which students, administrators, and teachers bring their children to the center. And then there are classes such as sociology, psychology, and others. We use the children more or less in a laboratory type situation to learn about children.
Babysitter operation?
In part. The other part is the students are learning about children.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
How much does this cost?
$441,000, right? That less receipts, that's a startup.
Startup? Capital grows, is that sort of technology?
Yeah, right. You're looking at $1.5 million for a student to get down the road.
Okay, back to our agenda. We have first Chancellor Pesek.
Page
56 in the blue book.
Chairman, I'm Howard Cutler, Chancellor of the Fairbanks campus. Campus that enjoys a full range of academic program from the freshman year on through graduate school. You know, the undergraduate years is the most exciting quartet of years that a student or an individual often has to face with extreme emotionally loaded decisions. First is the thing of going away from home, and that is an emotionally difficult time. The second is choosing a career. Life crashes in and narrows very rapidly when one has to decide now that he can't be a fireman and a fisherman and a surgeon and a teacher and all that, but must make a choice. And the third choice is that very exciting but frightening thing of choosing a mate. And you know that is an exciting and frightening experience. We create, through your help, an environment in which all of these decisions are attempted to be made at the same time, trying to move them forward in the process of thinking for themselves. Now, this is the exciting job that I am involved in. And I often think that you who sit here and help us on this never really get part of this excitement, and probably sometimes don't care for being part of the excitement. But don't want us to lose track of this is what we're here for, to help these young people develop and also at the same time help a faculty develop so it can help the student develop. Now, we have a maintenance budget this time. No changes in it. And my first priority in this was to maintain the current level of operation with emphasis upon filling the commitments for the 78 late starts. That is, those jobs that were fully funded this year, but were put into the supplemental. And so they need to be fully funded for next year, the difference between what we get in the supplemental for this time. Second, on meeting shifts and increases in enrollments and maintaining library and business services. Now, that was my first priority, maintaining that level. The second priority was to secure and maintain accreditation standards in civil, electrical, and mechanical engineering, mining and geological engineering, and chemistry, music, and business administration. My third priority was to increase the number of teachers for Alaska's schools through campus field-based learning center programs. Senator Holman sent me an interesting correspondence this summer of concern about certification for teachers in the bush. And this we put as a very high priority because on the Fairbanks campus, our School of Education is oriented towards the preparation of the teacher for Alaska. We need, from our standpoint, much more help in the state in the area of providing leadership in the development of secondary school curriculum, of placing teachers on the job in the bush, and of preparing them in the bush for the job. Our fourth criteria was to meet the demands for adult conferences, institutes, and professional seminars, but that was an item not asking for any general appropriation because it is a self-supporting program. That, Mr. Chairman, I welcome any questions that I can answer in enlightening what our budget is.
What figure are you talking about in terms of total dollar figure?
Total dollar budget figure. Talking about 2936.
I'm talking about instruction, total instruction.
2936.
Yes.
That covers all the new positions below.
That's right, sir. That's on column 6 and column 7. Maintenance budget, column 7, that was our request.
That's the maintenance total.
I'm talking about 10688. Thank you, Dave.
Senator Garcia, let's indicate maintenance is really a 10% increase in man months of instruction. Is there a 10% increase in student credit hours at home in this state?
Over the last time that we had budget increase, yes, we had a 12% increase this year over last year.
Mm-hmm. And 10% increase over that?
No, I'm not expecting much more than a 5% increase over that.
You're asking for 10% increase?
That's right. I'm not talking student credit hours, I'm talking quality of program here for accreditation.
Yes.
And we are up for examination for accreditation. The team visited us a year ago, and their final report will be published in June. We have received the preliminary report to what they're going to recommend, and it will become public in June. Now, this is the Engineers Committee for Professional Development. Talked about the accreditation on this central center. I'm talking about meeting those accreditation standards.
They said in their report that unless you take the number of additional faculty members, they wouldn't acquit you?
They're saying that we're in trouble with that. We're in such trouble in mining that we are under what is called a cause. We've got to show cause why they should continue to accredit us. Generally, they come in and say, well, we're just re-examining you to recertify you. This year, we're under a notification of cause that we've got to demonstrate to them why we should be re-accredited rather than just sort of a routine accreditation. And we've had their visit. They've told us that we are weak in these areas. We are serious. They recommend that this is what we do to bring ourselves up to their accepted standards.
You couldn't achieve this through perhaps leaving some other areas that you wouldn't want to have.
I don't see where by robbing Peter to pay Paul, we would gain much in the areas. I think we just find ourselves trying to shore up in the other areas. And I don't see those areas that should be sacrificed for.
Senator Tillion?
I can certainly see bringing things up to what's necessary for accreditation, but you mean there aren't any causes that you'd rather drop, anything that could be cut without hurting your accreditation? There aren't any expenses up there that really aren't vital to a good degree. You know, courses that have very few students.
I think we're doing a good job in trimming down those courses with students and moving out on that. If you look at our student credit hour production, I think you'll find that in most of the areas they're pretty solid and strong. But interestingly enough, not in this area of which to which I'm speaking, not in the area of mining. Our student credit hours in that are not large. It is our most expensive student credit hour program on campus. Now the decision to make: should we have a school of mining? You talk in terms of student credit hours. I think we should. Gentlemen, this is the only school in the country that teaches mining in frozen ground. Maybe the only state in the union that has frozen ground. But it is essential that we know about this for our own state development. So I've got here a high cost of, I don't talk student credit hours when it comes to mining. I've got to talk in terms of, is the program something that you value, the state values, and we should have prepared here for not only our students, but future development of mining throughout the world?
Dr. Cutler, following up on Senator Tillion's question, that may be one of the reasons, Senator, that we asked the university to do a zero-based process. If you look in the workbook on page 56, you'll find that the very last item that the university added in column 13 was $46,000, $51,000 for summer session support. And you might want to take a review of what's more important at the university next year, the accreditation of the mining program or summer session support from general fund, as an example of the way to use this workbook. In terms of trade-offs, for example.
If you look at the summer school support, I think you'll find that that was a not a general fund item, if I recall, but it was the increase of conferences and short courses, which are self-supporting.
No, this was the general fund support, the general fund support of that program. It was added into your very last column of the zero-based budget. There is about $46,000 in general fund support in that program.
Oh.
That was added in. That's what I think what Senator Tillion was getting to, what kinds of things might be reduced in order to protect the accreditation program, rather than adding new dollars to the budget. There are some things you could look at in the workbook in response to that kind of question.
Yeah, what page is the workbook?
56. Have you got a corrected page, sir?
Yes.
All I was really trying to do is to show, use an example of the kind of question Senator Tillion is asking. The information the committee now has in front of them, they could look at it.
May I ask a question? Dave, would that summer session be the summer of 78 or the summer of 79?
I think we'd have to ask Chancellor Cutler.
That would be 79. Well, no.
Be July and August, wouldn't it be 78?
We've got a division in the summer session because the fiscal year falls between the two. So it would be this July and August of this year and June of next year.
Would we have, if we were to cut that, would you have enough lead time to knock it out so that you wouldn't upset the people you planned on attending such a summer session?
What we would have to do on this, Senator Butkovich, is to cancel the June summer session of next year. Of 79. We would have to cancel the June summer session of 79.
But it wouldn't affect this year.
Wouldn't affect it. If one said, look, this is what you cut, then I would say, have already committed ourselves to this summer, but because of that split budget, a year from this June, we would cut out that summer session.
That's my answer to my question. Senator Fitz.
Well, I'm not saying cut it. I'm not saying not cut it. I don't know what it is that you're teaching. But if what you're teaching isn't vital to something else you're teaching, I think that might be a good one to prune. But I don't, you know, in a cursory look like we're going to get here, I don't know, but I do know that you're teaching some subjects up there that really aren't of great academic value. You know, they're fillers, as it were. And I think we could prune down on some of those fillers. Now, we don't have time to go into each thing. We just know that the cost of education in Alaska is staggering. You know?
We also have been on a maintenance budget for a couple of years. We've been trimming. And I'm with you. I understand what you're saying. But what is one man's need is another man's poison, and what appears to be a filler to one seems an essential for another. And we've got a value judgment here.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And if it provides a job for somebody after graduation, I like it. If it doesn't, I think we could do some of the fancy courses outside cheaper than we could do them here in Alaska. I don't think we can afford the gold-plated type. I think we have to take a look at those things that have practical application for Alaska after graduation.
I only wish that I could tell you that I have a gold-plated program. I wish that I could.
Well, you might not have a gold-plated program, but we're paying a gold-plated cost.
You know? Touché.
Dr. Cutler, what proportion of your student credit hours are taught by full-time and supporting taught by part-time faculty?
I don't know.
Last year when the review was made of that for the University of Development in this budget, it was approximately 75%. Courses were taught by full-time, 25 by part-time. That was teaching courses. It's not the faculty that split. The teaching courses are actually taught 75% full-time.
I note that the trend in this budget is toward more full-time faculty and less part-time faculty. Other campuses in the previous testimony, some about 35% is done by part-time faculty. Of course, this year are much cheaper than credit hours than full-time faculty. Couldn't you achieve the same student credit hour output and have more and reverse your trend here towards fewer part-time faculty, instead have more part-time faculty and fewer full-time faculty, and still not be any worse off than anybody else is in the university?
Oh, I think it would be considerably worse off, because the type of program that's offered on the Fairbanks campus of a four-year and a graduate program is quite different from a vocationally oriented community college program with people with technical skills and in areas of instruction that require a different type of training than is required in the type of academic program we offer. So I really think we need a very different type of faculty. We need a faculty that teaches not only the elementary course, but the advanced and graduate course, and does research at the same time. This is a different person from one to provide services at community college. I think we're talking about a very different animal.
Would you view your Fairbanks program as different from the University of Anchorage or the University of Juneau?
Both of them, yes, sir.
Why are you?
Well, because we have had the advantage of age. We teach graduate and upper division and lower division courses more fully across the board than they do. For example, in the Juneau area, we have a very fine program in master's level program in public administration. But that's their specialty here, and they're working on a specialty in fisheries. But that's the limit to the graduate program, as I understand it correctly. Is it beyond that, Rick?
Business
management. But ours is a much wider spectrum. In the same way with Anchorage, I think it's probably a matter of time in some of these. But we are very different.
Howard, you mentioned you read off four priorities when you were...
Yes, sir.
Can we identify those in the short form where they fall?
Yes. The first priorities of maintaining the shifts and increases in enrollment and the fulfilling the supplements. If we look at, I think...
Most of the part-time, most of the full-year funding program positions were in the business office and purchasing area, weren't they?
That's correct.
That would be page 69 of the short form. I believe that all those positions listed there are positions that were partially funded through the supplemental in 78 and would be fully funded in 79 budget. I think those relate to priority number one.
Thank you.
What we're speaking to.
That's exactly
all
right.
Of those positions that are listed on page 69.
And maintaining the business services. And I might say, gentlemen, if we look on that page in the terms of the purchasing agents and stuff, when federal auditors come and tell me that I'm short in my purchasing department and behind in that because I don't have enough staff, I put in a request for this, and it's very frustrating after you get the request in, then to have it held up for a year. So we get, even after you have given me the budget last year for it, turn around and not be able to spend it this year, when I'm sure you think you've done it for me, and I should get the job done, and I can't spend it. That's the problem I made.
Where's number two? Second priority, I'm sorry.
The accreditation standards in civil and electrical engineering, if you look on page 57, if we take the accreditation thing, down at the bottom of the page, still on the new positions, a technician, laboratory electronics, full-time position. This is in the area of civil engineering. Laboratory technician, part-time in the area of mining engineering. Associate professor of mining engineering. And there is the one part-time funded one this year, which is in the supplemental, and which we're asking again for. It's 12 months to be filled out in a associate professor of geological mining.
Now, positions on page 57, are they aboard by RFP?
No. These would be new positions.
Oh, I wonder.
Yeah, in this case, he's talking about position numbers 1, 2, and 3 would be related
right
to the second priority.
But I wondered, because it was by the RFP, that would be my full service. But that's kind of part of the unfunded.
That's right.
Again,
that's right. It's also sound.
Right.
So
now, the other
is
item 4 in the accounting area.
Those all, 1, 2, 3, and 4 would be related to accreditation.
To accreditation.
And that's your priority number 2.
That's right.
Who's number 3?
Number 3 in the, well, also, I'm sorry, back in number 1, the priority, is the items 5 and 6 in this area. The area of an additional person in criminal justice and an additional person in mathematics. Now this has to do with the shift in enrollments. We had an increase in the mathematics department of enrollment of 25%. That's 1,100 student credit hours. That's approximately 180 registrants in that, in the area of mathematics. I just need an additional person to carry that load. Also had an increase in our social justice, in our criminal justice program. It is a four-year program. We've got one person in it. That's not enough to carry a decent four-year program there with the enrollment that we have. We need more specialty in it, and that's why we're asking for a person in that area.
Have you considered
Senator
just dropping it?
Oh, it's
sure.
A new one.
How old is that program?
It's 2 years. No, it was 3 years.
Yeah, I remember fighting it when it started.
Well, that's the one in Anchorage. And there's a criminal justice center established in Anchorage, and that's been about
three or four years now, and that's been hanging on by fingernails with four or five or six faculty members. I don't know if that program has started in Fairbanks, so finally you said there's a maintenance plan.
Well, it started before my time, as at Erzini, and I...
Well, you said 2 years.
Well...
You said the last couple of years, several years of maintenance.
Exactly. The last 2 years that I've been here, we've been on maintenance. The justice program was here before I came 2 years ago, so I must stand corrected. It started before my time, so it must be at least 3 years old, let's put it that way. This is my history.
Has this always been general funded, or is that...
No, it's always... Yeah. You got me, because I don't know when it started, I don't know how it started. Yeah.
I think the difference here, Senator, is that in the Fairbanks program, the criminal justice program is an instructional element of the school. In Anchorage, what we set up in Anchorage was a criminal justice center for research and study of criminal justice code and the teaching of rural Bush education in criminal justice. And this is a, well, more than that, but the instructional program in Fairbanks was intact at that time. It was a portion of the school. It was, I'm not sure if it was a minor or not, it was maybe part of the overall political science program built into the regular instructional program. Prior to the time you set up the center and Anchorage for a different purpose.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask you a quick question? How long it's been? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were a quarter. Could I ask Rick, he knows the answer to how long that will be?
All I can tell you is I became a student at Fairbanks campus in 1973, and the criminal justice courses were being taught before that. But it is a course part, I think it was a minor at that time, within the political science and the management program. They had courses in police, management, science, and management, that kind of thing. As far as being a full criminal justice program, I don't know when that happened. So they have had courses taught in that program.
Number three.
The third was attempt to increase the number of teachers in Alaska school. And that is made up of the requests here in the Assistant Professor of Field Center Coordinating. You understand we now have five centers in our cross-cultural education program, five educational centers throughout the state, which these people are in the bush, helping those teachers in the bush to become fully certified teachers. And we're asking for support of an additional center in that field. Comes to about $92,000 with these added to people here, and we feel that this is one of the most basic needs of the state. There is also a need in here for the placement of teachers in the bush. There were between 700 and 1,000 job openings, teacher openings in Alaska last year. These superintendents and principals in these areas are seeking teachers back. We don't produce enough teachers in the state of Alaska to meet all these needs. So we have set up a service in the Fairbanks for the placement of student teachers from the lower 48 into Alaska schools. And it is booming in its request for support from the local schools.
Can I be sure which positions you're talking about in instruction? Is it numbers 8, 9, 10, and 11? Is the clerk type was also included in that package?
Yes, it is.
8, 9, 10, and 11, those four positions, plus the position on page 67, which is the placement office position. The administrative assistant and job placement, if I understand you correctly, would also be related to that priority.
In job, but yes, in inflation.
You said one more priority.
In essence, though, this is a new program.
No, no. No. No, we've got five centers already operating.
Number four.
in the state now. And these are teachers out there helping the school teachers to become upgraded in their competency. They teach classes regularly now. And this program, you may have met in through the Department of Education because it has been supported through a contract to us, through the Department of Education, over the last several years. And it's a cross-cultural education program. You understand that we go into the bush with teachers and teach the teachers there in their own environment and upgrade them to the level of certification so they can become fully certified teachers.
And they're not certified now?
They're not certified now, the ones that we're working with. There are five centers.
Yes. This is your contribution to the XCEED program?
It is, yes.
This would be a sixth center, and this one would be funded through the university rather than through the XCEED budget, which is in the
education. That's correct.
How many centers are there?
There are five centers now. We're asking for a fifth center. I've got that biscuit somewhere right now. This one was. Dillingham, maybe Steve Grubish is the director there. Fort Yukon, Larry Schaefer is our director there. Shismere, Joan Tannenbaum, and the Western Interior, R. Van Ness. Bethel and Boston. This gentleman, we feel, is a real pressing need for the state of Alaska. And it is an increase in the ongoing program.
Okay. Do you expect the same additional 700,000 new teachers this year?
Yes.
Years?
The turnover that they have. Just amazing. You can imagine the situation of a superintendent in Barrow finding out in August that he's got 8 resignations. And where does he get people to do it? And that's what our patient service has been helping people on. We feel that this is, the reason we're pushing this is we feel that we have a responsibility to bring this aid to the state and to recognize this need, and we think we're the ones that can meet the need and are willing to do it with your help.
This one sounds good. The political plans might
not. Well, police is necessary. Your criminal justice. What interests me is the demand for it.
Oh, I can see the demand for it, but it would be better off to make them go to a good school for it. I don't think we can afford to be there. Mm-hmm. Not lining our lives. That would go to every thing. I don't think that there's one that we can meet that.
Dr. Hunter, I have a question on page 63 on KUAC. Are you adding any new people there? Is that just an increase in the budget?
I'm sorry, are you adding any new people?
Page 63.
53?
63.
No, I don't believe we are in the same time.
What's the increase there that's close to 11,000?
I think, Mr. Chairman, you were here at the beginning yesterday when I explained column 5 really represents the revised fiscal 78 budget. I stuck it in there, and that's the latest budget information we have from the university. So, in effect, they have a decrease in 79, which is based on the reduction in restricted fund income. Since the university hadn't submitted all of our fees, the normal columns just weren't in use, so I stuck in the revised estimate column 5.
Okay. Are there further questions on the university campus, Fairbanks campus? Student administration, instruction. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, I think there are two things that the committee is very interested in. And Dr. Cutler is too modest to speak to those. First of all, there was a very good report published by the program, the teacher program that he's talked about. And I think, in my opinion, probably one of the most progressive programs the university is involved in trying to meet a critical need of the state. We, at the University of Alaska, can provide the teachers that are needed in Bush. It decreases substantially the cost of recruiting and bringing and moving teachers from the lower 48 to the state, as well as dealing with what we all know is somewhat of a cultural shock when we moved from Southern California to Point Barrow. The other thing is, in my opinion, Dr. Cutler, as an administrator, has probably done more to cut administrative costs and to reorganize his campus than at any other campus. And I think the committee would be interested in hearing him talk a little bit about his move to reorganize the Fairbanks campus.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Thank you. When I first arrived 3 years ago, I started out with a technique of a 3-year cycle, and I asked all departments to give me, over a 3-year period, list all the courses they were going to teach, every semester they were going to teach them, and what instructor would be teaching each course. This was done first from the standpoint of service to the students, and be sure that we had an honest catalog, that we were able to offer the program that we said was in the catalog. As a result, we immediately canceled a lot of courses, because when they began to compare them with the faculty that they had, they could not man that many courses in the 3-year period of time. So this was the first step involved. And I asked them to make their estimate on the basis of a constant level of enrollment. And you may remember at that time, gentlemen, we were on a decrease in enrollment because of the pipeline situation, and the Fairbanks was falling in terms of total student credit hours. They found it difficult to do. I found that very few departments could come in with a decrease in enrollment. Most of them said a 10% increase, and so I had to redo the whole exercise and force them back to a zero-based enrollment. The second year, they redid the 3-year cycle. And in that time, instead of just taking the first year and putting it over here to the third, as the system eventually, they found that they had many major changes to do, because I held them to the fact that in those areas in which there was a surplus faculty, it became very evident that they had more teachers there than they had courses to teach at the time. And what I found out was that they were attempting to put in special topics courses. You know, when you get desperate of fall of enrollment, then you try to jazz something up with a special topic here and make it more important. So, like someone was telling me, radical history of the United States in rather than a good solid course in history of the United States. Now, that didn't happen on our campus, but this is the type of thing that we'll try to jazz the thing up and put a real and cut back on special topics courses and said, look, let's get the meat and potatoes on the table, forcing them back to the country. The cooperation that I got was amazing. I was very rewarded by the way the faculty rallied to this. Now we're on the third year of this cycle of 3-year cycle evaluation. Let me take another angle at that. At the same time, I tried to pass the authority of making decisions on programs from the chancellor's and provost's office to the college and department area. And this was made possible by a reorganization of our faculty assembly, campus assembly. A year ago, we were able to turn over to the faculty totally academic program council, the academic council, and it has been well headed in these last 2 years. They are now building the program and controlling and analyzing what the courses should be. And then they insisted that each college have its own academic council to clear all the courses and programs before it got to the campus level. As a result now, one of the colleges, our largest college of arts and sciences, is insisting that their academic council review the 3-year cycles before they ever get to me. In other words, the decisions now are being pushed back for program, are being pushed back to the department level, and the responsibility is being assumed there by the faculty. And I am mighty pleased with the progress that we're making here in terms of putting our own house in order and shoring up and cutting back and redefining by the right people, by the faculty at the department and college level where it should be done, rather than being handed down from one person sitting there and saying, look, this is the way it ought to be done. So I am really very encouraged, and I thank Rick for the opportunity to tell you of this type of progress that I have attempted to make.
Any questions?
Are you having a problem with the obtaining of grants, that is not the obtaining of grants, but the ability to spend grants and the ability to shift funding from one desired program to another?
Yeah, I believe you're we're talking about in the field of research, is that right?
No, I'm talking about
in instruction.
In the grants that go to the instructional professors.
Well, I have trouble in the sense that I have no I have problems of flexibility of moving it with all the new regulations that we're now following as to what we can move accounting-wise from one area to the other. It's a new ballgame with us. And what you've asked us to do is certainly more restricted than it was before. I don't know, honestly, in the end, whether it'll be more restricted. But right now, with the uncertainty of what we can and can't do, and that uncertainty is partly my problem, to inform myself of what authority I have. I would say I had a very rough year on this.
Well, you don't have faculty coming to you and saying they received a grant to do a particular function, but they can't obtain the grant money because the process by which they have to go through the university and state system problems.
Yes. For example, we had in December a request to do some increasing in the fisheries area. But this would bring us over our budget request. So we had to get approval first through our administration, through the Board of Regents, through the Governor's Office, and through the Budget Audit Committee before we could accept an additional program, because it was an addition to our budget. Now, we had a tight 2-week period in which to get that grant accepted. We couldn't tell the agency that was going to support us on that. We could do it until we got through all that. And we just really stood on our heads to get that done. Now, through the cooperation, extreme cooperation, I would say, of the Board of Regents in the executive session emergency thing, at the Governor's Office and the Budget Audit Committee, it got done. Well, I tell you, it was a harassing experience.
Are there other more normal grants that are backlogged in any place in the system?
Well, I would say all of our RPs are requests for shifts and changes that have to be approved all the way up the line are backlogged at the present time.
They're all backlogged? You know where they are?
No, I don't, but I have not yet received approval for any of my requested changes.
Mr. Roach?
Just to address Senator Rossini's question, this grant will receive today the November budget. We would have to wait for approval of the Board of Regents on May the 15th on the normal channel. Probably another week of processing following that board meeting to get it out into the Governor's Office. Probably another week or 2 weeks to the process. So I think generally speaking, 2 to 3 month process is currently set up.
But is the process flowing as?
We've had a backlog at the university's standpoint all year, but I think it's broken clean now.
So it is, however slowly, it is flowing.
Has gotten the next issue, right?
Sorry.
Oh, it's like the winter breakup or something.
Chairman.
Aren't you budgeting up, George?
Yeah.
What do you find? You find that you have to have special meetings to work on these IPs or?
We're meeting on a weekly basis.
Sure, I understand during the session, but not a session. And has the university been coming in?
We've had some problems, I think. Those problems have been resolved.
Maybe I can ask, how many of these have you requested, say, since September of last year? How many IPs have you requested?
In terms of total IPs or total program now, in terms of grants?
Well, they're both IPs.
Yes, they're both. It would be quite a difference in number because many of our IPs are ships and transfers. Mr. Sweet, do you have any idea how many additional programs for increased income we requested?
On the research side, there's something like in the 20s, the total number of RPs and revisions, but probably six or eight of those have been for the budget fund.
I'm trying to find out, is budget not at all, or are they still in the system somewhere in the months?
I don't know how many of them are coming.
How many universities have you processed?
We had about four that have come through this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You processed four, Fairbanks alone, and research has 20 on it, and plus other ones in the instructional area are coming through also. Where are they? If you don't have any yet, they must be the governors or the regents or somewhere.
Dispute the administration on whether or not we have the right to review our people requests. I think that part of the hang up is the administration. In July, the administration stopped all RPs from the executive branch. That put the university, I think, in a confused state. They didn't know whether they should submit their RPs. Hold them or do what? Any of them at all. Our suggestion to the university was that the administration is not going to process them. We would appreciate receiving the RPs direct, so we couldn't have a deal with what was happening. Subsequently, the administration did go back to the RP process with their request, the executive branch rules. That's part of
Is the governor about to give to Budget Monitor the whole batch of them that they've been held up by heaven?
I don't know the status of those IPs. They're impressive.
Well, I hate to see the university suffering because of some other dispute that's not of their fault, and yet they're hung up on being able to change their programs or even get additional money, which may be lapsing if they don't have the authority to start spending.
So do I. I think we should realize that the Legislative Budget Audit Committee is meeting on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I understand.
Facilitate the processing of RPs wherever they come from, at the university. Maybe you should listen to the governor.
Well, I'm trying to find out where the problem is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might just do that. Yeah. But, George, has the administration been passing RPs on to you for approval?
For the executive branch?
Yes.
Yes.
On the university?
That 4 days, I think.
I think part of the confusion, Senator, is that what the university did in the RP process was they held them until the confusion was cleared up, and then they submitted a whole batch to the governor's office, all of which were transfers, not new income. The governor has been working on all of those transfers to put them into appropriation bill, whatever he calls it, appropriation adjustments, and doing all those first. Subsequently, the university then sent down the normal RPs in terms of increased income. And those have only gotten down to the governor's office, what, in the last 3 weeks, Usher?
Yeah.
And those, I don't even think they started working on yet, because I think they're still working on the transfer bill.
Mr. Chairman, maybe additional information for Congress. You're shaking your head.
Well, no, we are looking at both the transfers and the new funds. And hopefully, LBNA will have first section of the funding request.
Who is we?
The budget manager, the office.
So then, the real hangup, at least as far as the other income requests, which have been coming in since the fall, has been the Regents, because they have not transmitted it to the governor?
May I send in the second, add to that the basic problem, Senator Orsini, has been that they have piled up at the university level.
University level, where?
In the statewide office.
Statewide administration office, they have not yet gotten the Regents, they were piling up the statewide.
They were piling up there, we are caught up now, but we have, for example, transmitted to the governor's office some 143 RPs of one bundle, which is a tremendous problem for them to wade through. So the specific answer, Senator, is they did back up. They are all up to date now with a tremendous load in Barbara Thomas's office as a function of the backup.
Well, I don't understand yet. Was it held by the administration and not given to the Regents? Did the Regents have them before them and just not act? Where was
they had to be brought up and processed up to the Regents by the administration. In the process of their piling up, they did not get to the Regents. They have begun, you know, they're all through the Regents now.
But the backlog occurred at the statewide administration level.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions on that? Okay, let's go on to organized research. Page 21, starting at page 21. From 36 million to 41 million across. Mr. Cutler, starting on page 21. That's the summary.
Howard, could you address the what appears to be the Regents policy and general fund increases in the research budget as an overall question?
Yeah. This year there has been in the overall budget no increase given to the research area for step increases in salary administration, or in the salaries, which is part of the regular salary program attacking, and it's been on a level funding for research. No correction for inflation, no correction for staff increases. Research area feels that this is, well, this is a treatment different from given all the rest of the university in this area. And so there's not happiness in the general research camp because of this value judgment. But it's there, and so we find ourselves with an exceedingly tight and restricted budget. I might say that within the research area, it's really different from the instruction area, in which it's really more zero-based budgeting, in a sense. Every project that they do, because the projects that they get from research have to be approved by the sponsoring agencies, and a budget submitted for their approval. So they're much more used to meeting this zero-based approach. However, the opportunities to do research are dependent upon the general fund support of our research program. And when we restrict those and hold them back, we restrict what will be the future research 2, 3, 5 years from now. And so this restriction this year to a no increase, not only a no increase, but not even up to main maintenance level, is tough. Not happy.
Could you also address, Chancellor, the change that the university made in closing for overhead recoveries on the strict funding?
Yes, thank you.
It's an overall.
This correct some of the figures in here, and I'm glad that you brought it out, because the overhead, which was usually charged by the research unit, now is 100% of that is returned to the research unit and paid back to the various units of the university in terms of purchase requests. So you'll find a shift of about $900,000 from overheads, a decrease there, and an increase in purchase receipts of different units of the university for those services that they render to the research unit.
Program receipts.
Program, thank you, sir. Program receipts.
So that's not, in your opinion, that's not a net increase to the research budget by making that change?
No.
It's just changing the source of income between two different units?
That's correct.
What was their thinking with regard to the no step increase in salary?
In part, that it would be paid from funds relinquished by central administration in the terms of around $380,000 of services that they rendered that they would no longer charge the research units for. It would be paid out partially from that. And as I stand, the other feeling that the percentage of support for research was higher than they cared to continue to support it. Maybe others wish to speak to that item, but that was my understanding.
Question?
I would like, if I may, Mr. Chairman, to say a couple of words more on the research thing in terms of when you support research in the university, you have then a direct track into the instructional program, and you have it in two ways. The knowledge that comes out of the research done by the university, as contrasted to research done by private organizations or by other units of the state, the information gained from that research does not immediately get into the instructional stream. The people who gain the knowledge of that research are not the ones who put it back into the instruction. But in the university, the gainers of that knowledge have immediate contact with the instructional field, so the information gets right back into the instruction, not only in the individual teacher's class, but in the textbooks that become the next generation. Training. The second way it gets directly into the stream that research done by other units beside the university do not get in is in the training of graduate students who are part and parcel of that research program. So when you support a research project to the university, you also support the instructional program. And I think this is important to know when the state lets any research grant to agencies other than the university or agencies outside the university community.
How many of your research faculty are also classroom teachers as part of their normal function?
If you gave it over a 3-year period of time, I would say that 90% of the researchers taught a class within a 3-year period of time. At any one period of time, I would say probably the thing would come to close to 60%, but that's just a see-the-pants guess.
The research people, about 60% of them in 1 year teach one course?
No, over 3 years. In 3 years, I 60%, I'd say in 1 year. Now that's the 90% was more carefully researched.
In 3 years.
Yes.
How many of the classroom, predominantly classroom faculty are involved in organized research program areas.
I don't know. I would, and say in the organized areas, I would say not, I'm making a guess now, sir, 30%. But you're talking about organized research, different from the regular research that a faculty member is expected to. I'm guessing, sir, when I say 30%. I have not researched that.
Go ahead.
Howard, there are two major areas within the research programs where you've asked for an increase in general funds for some support. One is in the agricultural experiment station on page 29 for a home for reindeer range management. Can you speak to that request? Backup material, I saw the chancellor talk about reindeer range management study and land use study. Reindeer.
No.
Reindeer range.
No. They have cattle.
The range management workload increase is a result of putting the Homer Research Center online with an active range management project. Responding to the needs of the reindeer range management requirements and the demand for range management research in land use evaluations by the state, the Soil Conservation Service, and the Native organization. We're asking for an increase of assistant professor, 8-month load, $21,000, increase in a professional technician for 4 months of $7,800, a seasonal field labor, $3,600, staff benefits, $5,300. Travel increased to Kotzebue, Nome, Kodiak, and Homer, $3,200. Commodities, range plot materials, maps, seeds, fertilizers, and tools, $4,000. Contractual services, air charter and shipping, $4,000. Field equipment and transit, $600. Portable power brush cutter, $350. If I may continue. A report to the governor entitled Assessment of Research Needs for the Agriculture and Forestry in Alaska. Following a statewide review by the United States Department of Agriculture and the Bureau of Labor Management and private consultants in August 1976, recommended an increase emphasis on livestock feed-based research, including work with semi-domesticated species, that is reindeer management systems. The range management research is required for proper evaluation and development of lands managed by Native corporations in the Northwest and Western Alaska, as well as private, state, and federal lands with range potential. The program would assist in solving the problems of increased meat supplies for rural Alaska and improve their economic base. The answers to the managing of the forage base of Alaska rangeland is one of the greatest problem areas of the present beef industry.
What are they doing at Homer?
What are they currently doing at Homer?
No, that's where these people would be stationed according to the show for.
And what they would be working on there is the horticulture, the grain base research, to use those facilities there for this type of research to build the feed base for the livestock program. We've got to find out how they can be fed, grain for which they can be fed, the material for which they can be fed.
If you raise grain at Homer, that same grain deal would be grown out.
Well, this is the place where they've got the facilities, and this is where they make the testing.
That's like looking for the design you want in the street light to get the light over there, even though you didn't design that.
Touche. Again, except the fact that we do have facilities in Homer. And do you use the facilities you get, or do you go out and build some additional ones? We're trying to use...
Additional ones, if you use.
I beg your pardon?
the research isn't going to do any good, so I'm going to get some new.
Well, that's right. We think this is the most efficient way and effective way to use those research facilities. That's a simple thing, I was.
The stuff in Homer is fine for her, but it's not necessarily going to do much good for a reindeer unless they go up on top. They need to be careful of that, but I'm as confused as everybody else.
Well, you have to have a base for this, for the study, and this seems to be the best facilities that we have. We're trying to utilize them well.
The other increase, Chancellor, was on an ADIBC climatologist position on page 39.
Yes. In this area, we have a need in a LeMaitre professor who will be retiring in a year or so, a year or 2 years. And in order for one to develop a base for getting funds for research in the continued area of climatology, we need to get a new young man in here started. Now, this would not be a recurring request. This would be a one-year thing. We bring a person in, get started in the field, and we would expect him then to become self-supportive as the others in getting research grants to carry on in the area of climatology.
To understand you correctly, then, that in fiscal 80, you would reduce the general fund support of the ADIBC by that same 40,000.
That'd be my understanding. Is that correct, Mr. Sweet?
I think that this position would be continuing. There is a request from the Geophysical Institute for a position where the intent was to have it restricted funded after 1 year. I think that if I understand this one correctly, they've experienced a greater workload from the public sector in the climatology area for several years, and ADIBC then has been budgeted and trying to respond to that public service.
For a second, I spoke to the wrong issue. This is AEIDC. I was speaking to the Geophysical. I'm sorry, sir, I stand corrected. This is an AEIDC. The increase of public demand for information in this area has absorbed an increasing amount of time of people on the staff there now at the present time. This is not one that will be replaced. This is one that will be permanently needed. I'm sorry, I was on the wrong issue.
I have a question on page 45 on the mineral industry research. Does the research part of this budget tie into the accreditation of the university, or is it entirely separate?
It is the request here. Does not tie in, but the units are inseparable, because when the accreditation team comes in, they look and see what type of professional support do we have to draw upon for our instructional program, and what is in the mineral industries research lab in instructional support there is very important in our accreditation. But this particular item is not directly related to that.
Are there any further questions on research? If not, we'll go into Chancellor Wolf, UAA. And that starts on page 73. They're requesting an increase of $3,500,000 to $6,000,001. Last year we gave them above the request that came down, we gave them $675,000 extra, which would go into this year's base. It did not go into construction.
No, they got the $675,000. The $675,000 was not because what was vetoed was in some additional money put directly into instruction for changes in part-time, full-time faculty ratio. But there was, for Chancellor's distribution, there was a $675,000 sum which was not touched.
Go ahead, Chancellor Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The University of Alaska Anchorage is
Aberdeen developing a four-year advanced institution offering comprehensive baccalaureate degree programs and graduate degrees at the master's degree level. Our enrollments have a history of a continuous increase on student credit hours, likewise continually increasing. Our research projects efforts there grown and developed. We want to make note that the research and instruction on the Anchorage campus is, those two items are tied together, they're fully integrated. We do not have, I would want to leave the impression that our research is disorganized, but we do not have an item of organized research together. We will be engaged in self-study for regional accreditation to be accomplished during the next 10 to 12 months. Simultaneously, we will be seeking accreditation in specialized programs such as business administration, public administration, social work. We'll be maintaining our approved programs, for example, in teacher education. Our greatest need and our priorities, as shown in our FY79 budget request, include library books and staff, support services, business services, and increase in faculty positions.
I have a question overall. Last year, we were just talking about, we appropriated $675,000 for more faculty at the senior college there. We also appropriated $500,000 to raise the ratio of full-time from part-time, or the ratio of full-time to part-time faculty. We're going to reduce that to $175,000, so you did receive $175,000 to raise the ratio. But the ratio of full-time to part-time faculty decreased from 72% to 69%. So evidently, even though we had the intent to raise the ratio, you hired more part-time faculty than full-time faculty after we gave you, at least tried to give you some direction at your request. And you weren't here last year, but Sardell,
yeah,
was here and made that request. Can you explain that?
Well, we made the effort to do so. I don't have the complete figures here. I thought that from the announcement we had made that there was a slight increase in that ratio. But I assume these come from Mr. Ward.
As I understand, the appropriation was made to four-year and graduate instruction, which would include both the community college and the senior unit. And working from the table D and the information that was provided by the university, adding together both the professional and bargaining unit members from the community college and the senior unit, and balancing that out against the labor pool positions in both the community college and senior college unit, the ratio of full-time to part-time actually decreased from 72% in fiscal 77 to 69% in fiscal 78.
That's combining the figures from both units.
That's combining the figures from both units. The appropriation, as I understand it, was made to both units. So one would assume you would have to combine the figures from both units.
There was two separate appropriations, one to the four-year program and one to ACC, so they each got $175,000 to improve their ratio.
They each got $175,000,
yes.
Okay. And
$125,000,
the figures should be taken separately, right?
Yes, they should.
Try that. Okay.
Can I add a quick remark here, Mr. Chairman? There's more to it than that question, I think. During the budget process last spring, the legislature approved an allocation to UAA and ACC to improve their full-time, part-time teaching ratio. UAA had reported a teaching ratio of 33% full-time teachers in the classroom versus 65% part-time in the classroom. And the legislature appropriated, I think, $500,000, and the governor reduced it down to $125,000. Subsequently, this year, the legislative intent was to use those funds to reverse the trend in full-time, part-time instruction. Subsequently, the university redid its figures and reported to the regents in September that they made a mistake last year, and really that it was the reverse, that there really was 65% of the classes being taught by full-time and 33% by part-time. However, they still went ahead and used $125,000, even though specifically intended to change that ratio. Chancellor Wolf, maybe you can speak to that.
Essentially, that's correct. The information that was provided along with the request last year did indicate that the shift was to be made from the ratio other than what actually existed.
And the university went ahead and used the money anyway, even though they found the ratio was in absolute reverse of what the legislature thought when it appropriated those funds.
That's true, but it was used to provide further improvement in that ratio.
The question came to the regents in September because the question was raised about whether the intent was being followed. And I assume since it was brought to the regents' attention, the regents approved it. Maybe Dr. Brewer can speak to that.
With reference to that board meeting, which was my first, I recall it coming up, Dave, and the board was inquiring whether or not of the then chancellor of that institution to whether this had in fact increased that ratio beyond that at the beginning of the year as a function of these funds. The information provided then was yes. I don't recall the specific data on it, though, Dave.
Data?
As to it, what the percentage increase, what he had obtained by utilizing these funds, whether or not there was in fact an increase.
I think Chancellor Lindor, in effect, reported to the, as Dr. Wilkes is saying, that yeah, there was an increase in the ratio of full-time to part-time.
Okay.
Maybe 1%, but he didn't tell them about
it. CUNY just did the run again, and in 1970, fiscal year 77, it was 65% full-time. Fiscal year 78 was 63%.
Now this is on faculty, not necessarily the classes taught, but on the numbers of faculty, the ratio of full-time and part-time.
Why is it decreasing, even though we're giving more money?
Numbers were what last year?
65%.
Last year at UAA, the ratio of full-time faculty was 65%. This year at UAA, the ratio of full-time faculty is 63%. This is according to chart D in the information that gave us. Yeah, right, that one.
Chairman, is it?
Yes, at the Anchorage campus, we're simply losing full-time people to quit. We lost the entire military program, perhaps four or five more teachers. Statewide, we lost 16 teachers in 1 year. Just quit. That's what happened.
That's the community college level, actually.
Yeah.
Well, my recollection that Mr. Ford, when he completed his audit of this, his report was that there was an increase, an improvement in that ratio.
Jim, go back there.
Yes, my name is Tim Killsworth. At the question that Mr. Scott raised about the Board of Regents reviewing this in September, I don't recall consideration by the Board of this issue, but I recall that Hugh Ford from Legislative Audit did conduct an audit, and I have not seen a copy of that audit yet. My understanding, the audit reflected that there was an increase in the full-time faculty, but, you know, and I don't pretend to speak for Chancellor Lindauer nor Chancellor Wolf. One of the problems you run into on the receipt of funds for fiscal year and recruiting full-time faculty is that you're out of the market period. On receipt of the funds in July, it's very difficult to recruit full-time faculty beginning in September. And I'm sure one of the attempts that happened was to offset the need for instructional staff by utilizing some of those funds to hire part-time instructors. In the interim, the recruiting occurred. And I think this is just part of the explanation. We'll be happy to go back and try to resolve the numbers that you're asking for. I don't have the figures at the moment.
For the board meeting, Mr.
Welcome, Senator. Julie, it's that time of the year, evidently.
Right down three continents. Thank you.
We'll remember that next time. We can't get full-time people. You had a question.
Yes, sir. Mr. Scott mentioned 175,000.
I couldn't remember the final figures because the governor needs to go down to a figure. It's either
one part of the chance of distribution.
No.
No.
No, there was a big to-do last year about increase not getting enough, so we appropriated especially for the specific purpose.
On the change in the ratio, if you also increased labor pool last year, I don't know if you did or not, that would also draw the office.
We don't know.
What happens was the university increased the labor pool through the expenditure of that fund, which resulted in a change in the ratio of accounts that are up.
Okay, continue, Dr. Wood. Instruction. The positions noted on page 73, new positions listed there, are in keeping with our priority listing our needs in the area of increasing the faculty positions to keep up with the growth and development of the institution.
Chancellor, do these positions have any relationship to the draft of your academic development plan on campus?
Yes, they did.
Directly? You said that these were related to growth in student credit hours. Are they also more directed towards development of departmental academic master plan improvement?
Yes. Although our plan at this point in time is still in draft stage and not completed, these are in keeping with the intent of the plan.
I guess I'm trying to find out if there's a mix here between growth and academic master plan expansion of the departmental process.
Yes. You see, as I pointed out to you earlier, the offering of comprehensive baccalaureate degree programs requires a faculty that offer the work that is needed for those programs. And these are representative positions to enhance and the development and growth that's taking place here. But it definitely isn't even with the plan.
You had a current year shortfall in receipts, which this committee's very aware of through House Bill 717, $200,000. Is that reflected in this 79 request? Is that shortfall supposed to be reduced, or have you anticipated that you'll make that money up next year? Has it affected this request at all?
That adjustment has been made in this.
Has been made?
Are the list of new people that are on page 73 prioritized in those numbers? Yes. Okay.
Go ahead. What then, Dr. Wolf, is the proportion currently of full-time and part-time?
It's
as far as from student credit hour perspective.
It's approximately 66%. I don't have a precise number, but it's right in that. If I recall the figures that Mr. Ford, I don't know what has happened to the report, his report, but he spent a good deal of time and effort determining exactly what the percentage is, and my recollection is 67%.
Do you have a comparable figure last year that compare that to reasonably accurate?
Yeah, 35-65. No, sir. 35-65, that was, let's see. If 35, you're talking about full-time, was an error. That was not correct.
I can't understand how last year, without intentionally doing it, they could have told us that figure of 35% full-time, and there was Lindauer and Sarah Dell Fredericks and the rest of them testifying that it was such a terrible ratio, and they came crying here and demanding that we increase it, and that's why we appropriated such a large amount to change it. Now that's too much of an error, unless it was intentional.
And I'm pissed off. Go ahead.
Well, I have to concur with that. In fact, that was the real pitch that was made by the Anchorage campus. And, you know, we talked before we went into the meeting about, you know, the major concerns of the campus, and that was it. I remember being told by both Saravelle and Chairman Lindauer, if we can just get this straightened out, you know, we'll make a significant improvement. If you can just do this for Anchorage. And I don't see how it could have been unintentional. I hate to say that, but it was clear in the discussion prior to the meeting. It was just clear from the way the committee considered it. It was clear from the way the committee acted on it. And I frankly think that, you know, as an Anchorage legislator, I've been placed in an extremely difficult position in trying to do anything for the Anchorage campus. This is the first time that I've known that the information that the university presented in obtaining the money last year was just flat false. And I don't see a mistake of that size, in the first place, how it could have been unintentional, and two, why the people that helped obtain the money last year and have to maintain some credibility in this committee are not informed of it until now.
At what point did you discover that, in fact, erroneous information had been presented to the committee last year? That, in fact, it wasn't a 33% full-time portion, it was the reverse of the session.
Call it a disclaimer talk, but I was not involved in the budget conference last year as the dean of acting chair, but the time at which I became aware of it was the time